Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathy Merini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. As President Biden prepares to meet with Turkey's President Erdogan next month, the focus will undoubtedly be on the long list of foreign and security policy issues that have caused a rift in U.S.-Turkey relations. In her latest piece, expert Tuba Tanyeri Erdemir, who joins us today on The Greek Current, makes the case that President Biden also needs to include cultural heritage diplomacy in his broader approach to Turkey. She explains that cultural diplomacy, focused on the heritage of at-risk communities and carried out in collaboration with local stakeholders, has the potential to engage a wider segment of Turkey's population and can go hand-in-hand with the promotion of pluralism and peace-building. Tuba Tanyeri Erdemir is the coordinator of the ADL's Task Force on Middle East Minorities and is a research associate at the University of Pittsburgh in the Department of Anthropology with an extensive background in cultural heritage preservation. Tuba, it's great to have you back on The Greek Current.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Before we talk about your piece and your recommendations for the Biden administration, can you walk us through just how cultural diplomacy is traditionally conducted and how it helps build relations with other countries?
Of course. Cultural diplomacy is public diplomacy around arts, culture, education, and heritage that can lead to an exchange of ideas to foster mutual understanding between different states. And the U.S. embassies and consulates around the world have departments dedicated to cultural affairs and work with local partners in putting together projects. This is an important issue for the U.S. to have a public face in those countries, but it also helps the U.S. to work with local partners in developing cultural projects.
Tuba, there's a long list of problems that need to be resolved in the U.S.-Turkey relationship, from, you know, Turkey's purchase of the S-400s to its human and civil rights record at home. This may put issues like cultural heritage preservation, for example, on the back burner. Why is it so important that President Biden insists on including cultural heritage diplomacy when dealing with Turkey?
Because cultural heritage diplomacy offers an opportunity for engagement. And through that engagement, the U.S. can support democratic institutions and civil society in Turkey. And it also offers an opportunity to engage with multiple stakeholders, including at-risk communities, other democratic partners, and different levels of state organization in Turkey. Through cultural diplomacy, the U.S. can help promote pluralism and peace building. And these are actually at the very core of supporting democracy and human rights in Turkey. And this is kind of like one of the foundational building blocks in working with an international ally like Turkey. So it's to the United States' advantage to work through cultural diplomacy that offers a larger engagement with Turkey, including municipal governments, civil society organizations, and vulnerable groups and individuals.
Can you elaborate a little bit further on how cultural heritage diplomacy can really improve human rights conditions for Turkey's ethnic and religious minorities? Because I know that's something that you make the case for in your latest piece.
Let's start with the basic point that for us heritage professionals and everybody else in the world, we consider heritage as a human right. So heritage is a human right. So anything you do in the area of heritage, especially when you're dealing with at-risk communities, contributes to promoting human rights issues in any context that you're working in. So by working on preserving heritage of religious and ethnic minorities in Turkey, you highlight the important point that they are a part of Turkish society and they have been here for a long time. So by highlighting their heritage, you not only make them visible, but you also acknowledge their contribution and accomplishments to this, you know, nation state that they are living in. It is a crucial step in recognizing them as equal citizens of the nation, but also it's important for them to feel as an important part of that society too. As such, you highlight diversity and pluralism that goes back in time. There is also another important issue when you're working, especially with communities that have a traumatic past in the national history and national history of the country. For instance, when we're dealing with Armenian heritage, as I have outlined in the piece that I wrote for the Middle East Institute, when you're dealing with the case of Armenians, you have to deal with the issue of the traumas of 1915. And through heritage, you can actually acknowledge the traumas that the minority population had gone through without talking about them. So it offers you a way of acknowledging the memory of the past, acknowledging the traumas of the past, without even talking about the issue of genocide itself. So it gives you an area in which you can build empathy within Turkey, within Turkish citizens of different groups, of different ethnic and religious minority groups. So it contributes to peace building in the long run as well.
Tuba, there are two projects that you highlighted in your piece, the restoration of Akhtamar and Serb-Giragos Armenian Apostolic Churches in Turkey's Van and Diyarbakir provinces, that offer crucial insights as to the benefits and pitfalls, as you say, of such initiatives. Can you tell us about these two projects and why they're so instructive?
I mean, I think both of these projects contributed significantly to Turkey's understanding of its religious minorities. But as I outlined in the case, there are pitfalls and there are best practices. The way I started working on these projects was to look for hope for the future, let's say. Because, you know, I work on contested heritage. I work on heritage sites that have seen a lot of trauma, bloodshed, and conflict. But I was wondering in 2014, is there any potential of religious heritage sites for peace building? So that was my primary attention in looking at the cases in Akhtamar and Serb-Giragos. And when I started looking at these cases, I also started asking, what are some of the best practices and what are some of the worst practices? And even though I think both of the cases have their merits, I think the case of Serb-Giragos highlights a lot of the best practices, whereas the case of Akhtamar highlights some of the issues that we should be cautious about when we're using these heritage sites in peace building. Let me start with Akhtamar. Akhtamar was opened as a museum. This is an ancient church located in Van in eastern Turkey on an island in beautiful Lake Van. It's part of a monastic complex and it is, you know, very valuable for its architectural and art as it's decorated with relief sculptures all around. And it's a gem of a church, let's say. So the Turkish government took on the restoration of the church and opened it as a museum in 2011. And they invited Armenian clergy from Istanbul to hold liturgy at the site on one day per year, which is actually a great gesture. And this annual liturgy brings together a wide group of individuals, Armenians from Istanbul, Armenians from all around Turkey, but also Armenians from Armenia and diaspora come to be part of this really emotional ceremony. But as this is taking place, everybody knows that the host of the whole event is the Turkish government itself. And the restoration of the church took place without including the Armenian authorities in a meaningful way. That a lot of the critical decisions were taken without consultation with the Armenian community. And as important as the event is, this annual liturgy is, it has a level of exclusivity that the site belongs to the Turkish government. It is a museum. It is ticketed on every other day of the year. It does not belong to the Armenian community, and that's kind of highlighted throughout. Whereas in Serb-Giragos, the restoration project took place with the Serb-Giragos Foundation, located now in Istanbul. The members of the foundation were involved in the restoration, and they were the primary individuals who make the decisions throughout the restoration project. It was supported by the HDP local government. So Diyarbakir's metropolitan mayor and Diyarbakir's mayor of the historical Sur district were in full support of the project. They involved the local partners in the project. They offered moral and financial support. So it was a collaborative project, fully under the control and ownership of the Serb-Giragos Foundation based in Istanbul. Now, at the end, Serb-Giragos became a church, not a museum. And this was discussed, and this was a decision of the Armenian community, of the foundation that is located in Istanbul. And the end result became kind of like a safe haven, a sanctuary, in which you could talk about traumas of the past, acknowledge those traumas, and it built a lot of empathy, mutual empathy in the region, and I would argue that went beyond too. So it still kind of haunts me that Abdullah Demirbaş, the mayor of the historical Sur district, stated on the opening day, and I will quote his beautiful words, he said, "Our grandparents, incited by others, committed wrongs, but we, their grandchildren, will not repeat them." So this is kind of like a not only a powerful acknowledgement of the Armenian genocide itself, but it is the way to move beyond these traumas, to acknowledge the contribution of the Armenian minority to the, you know, culture, to acknowledge them as parts of your history, your culture, and your future. So this was actually, I thought, a very important model in which we as heritage professionals should be using in our work. And that's why I particularly wanted to highlight Surp Giragos.
So it looks like Surp Giragos is an example of what you call this best practices approach. Are there any other examples, Tuba, that we should be aware of or that you can kind of touch on?
It's a different example, but it is also one in which the U.S. government has involved in as well. The ancient Armenian city of Ani is going through a restoration project at the moment. And this is an archaeological site. It's not a living heritage site like Surp Giragos, for instance. But the Ani received U.S. Ambassador's Fund for its restoration a couple of years ago. And I thought that was a very good way of contributing to a project that would help acknowledge Armenian contribution to the Turkish society as well as, you know, for future peace building as well.
Tuba, in your opinion, then, what are the lessons that the Biden administration should take away from these case studies that you've presented to us when forming its cultural diplomacy policies as they relate to Turkey?
It is important to support heritage policies, and especially those that involve local partners and that involve the at-risk communities as well. So if, you know, cultural diplomacy focused on at-risk communities carried out in collaboration with local stakeholders, it has the potential to engage with a wider segment of Turkish citizens, including municipal governments, civil society organizations, and vulnerable groups and individuals. And this can help U.S. public diplomacy, but also promote diversity and pluralism in Turkey.
Tuba, thanks for joining us on The Greek Current. It was great having you back on.
Thank you so much, Thanos. It's always a pleasure.
In other news, Greek authorities confirmed on Wednesday that Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu will visit Greece next week. Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis will receive Cavusoglu in Athens on Monday. On the same day, Cavusoglu will also meet with Greek Foreign Minister Nikos Dendias. According to an announcement by the Greek Foreign Ministry, the talks between the two ministers will focus on bilateral relations as well as regional and international developments. According to diplomatic sources cited by the Athenian Macedonian news agency, Dendias is also expected to host an informal dinner with his Turkish counterpart on Sunday. Finally, Cypriot health authorities have advised people under the age of 50 to use the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines, which are based on newer mRNA technology, rather than the AstraZeneca vaccine. The health ministry said the decision came after a majority recommendation by its panel of scientific advisors on COVID-19, following reports of serious incidents concerning blood clots. They also recommended that a second dose of the AstraZeneca vaccine be administered to those who did not have any serious adverse effects following their first dose. The decision comes amid a national effort to get as many people vaccinated as possible. Some 50.4% of the population have so far received at least one vaccine shot, while 23.7% have been fully vaccinated. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.